Welcome back for the afternoon session, the open discussion session number four. And this is sort of loosely centered around data analysis. And Francisco is going to introduce some of the issues in this for discussion in this particular session. And then following that, once the discussion dries up, I have organized the questions that you've submitted, and we can work our way through those questions. But remember, this is open discussion. Please feel free to interrupt at any time. Francisco?
Okay, so it's pretty difficult to have a panel discussion with no panel. And I didn't think I had enough to keep you interested, so I am not giving a presentation of my work. So what I would like to do, and I definitely will need your help, is to actually try to have some sort of discussion. So the aspect of data analysis that I am going to focus on, or that I thought we could talk about, is the only aspect of data analysis that I know anything about, which is generating initial reconstructions and trying to refine to low resolution. I feel that the people that have generated algorithms for and programs for data analysis have done a great job. So if you have good data, I think you can be pretty sure to get a reconstruction with the tools that we have already available. So what I would like to do is to touch on some of the aspects that Tom Valls mentioned and to bring up issues that people that are working on new projects would have to face about, you know, how to judge the quality of the data, how to generate initial models, what kind of issues come up when one is facing that kind of situation. So again, I ask you to please participate so that we can actually have a discussion. Ooh, yeah, this was working before, but I think you can see most of it, right? So, regarding the data, right? Tom made the point that it was probably a good idea to check samples in stain when you start on a new project. And my take on it is, yes, I think it is a great idea. And the comment that I make to people in my lab is, if you cannot figure out what is happening with your sample in stain, imagine the problems that you will have in ice, where the contrast is so low, so much lower, right? So the idea is, I think it makes really great sense to look at samples in stain. And there are two questions that I would like to bring up for discussion regarding this is, in terms of working with particles that are relatively small and asymmetric, which is the thing that many people will work with, and by small I mean under a megadalton, perhaps around half a megadalton is a, you know, typical size for many complexes. What are the chances of determining the quality of single particle images under those conditions? So we heard an example from Nico for icosahedral particles where there actually you can see clear separation into two types of populations. Now, what kind of experiences have people had with that type of discrimination for smaller particles? And then the second question that I would like to bring up is there a different way of judging image quality other than looking at cross-correlation coefficients? For example, something that we have tried to do, and I think Bridget has also looked into this, is could one follow the behavior of a particle in terms of alignment parameters along a refinement and then decide if the particle is always going to the same orientation? Namely, if you change references as you move ahead in the refinement, can that be used as a measure of the quality of the image?
Question of whether you can, like in Nico's case, or whether you get a bimodal correlation really my experience with the data I showed in my poster here was I tried to do that. I tried to select, okay, these look bad, these look good. I'll take these, reconstruct them, get a reconstruction. I took the bad, reconstructed them, and got the same reconstruction. And so it, in fact, didn't appear to be that the cross-correlation didn't tell you a whole lot about the quality of that particular particle, except that it may have told you more about the stain in negative stain than it was telling you about the actual particle. So that's my concern to negative stain about whether or not you can use that as a separation.
I can say that we've had the same experience with cryo data. If we try to apply cross-correlation cutoffs, we really don't see any significant improvement in the quality of the reconstruction.
So any reasonable person looking at them would realize you can't tell the difference. And these are called jumpers.
We also agree that it depends on the structure, because some structures have false symmetry or pseudo symmetry. Then particles will always have at least two very strong facts, but there's nothing wrong with the nature of the structure. For example, it's easy to distinguish half views from side views in elongated.
So what I think?
Can we talk on the right hand side of the room? So I think we may need to consider slightly outside the box, because we have been using the existing algorithm to look for whether they're good or bad particles. And recently we published a paper using a kind of Monte Carlo procedures, which start kind of random walk to start with. Now at the beginning, I thought it would not work, but the guy in the lab by the name Xian Liu, he actually make it working. And we test it with some really old data set on Ryzhou virus, which has also X-ray structures. So I think that based on this consistent criterion, rather than some cutoff, he was able to distinguish what is so-called good particle and bad particles. So we do reconstruction from good particles that actually look good. Bad particle actually look bad. So I think in a sense, there should be either the algorithm I just quoted or other algorithm, which I think a lot of software experts here may consider in exploring. And so I don't think we should a priori think that it won't work. So that's one comment. Now, but you can disagree, but let me just make, can I make another comment on the first point? I just a little bit skeptical about you start using a stand. And in our experience, we don't know how to do standing. So as a result, we never use stand, even in new samples. Because a larger sample, actually, it takes quite a bit of work to get the stand working for those who don't practice stand, particularly those people who don't know microscopy to start with. So I guess any particle, what you ask is, how big the particle is? Some like 100 kilodalton, no matter stand or unstand, would be tough anyway. So most of us work with particle are reasonable size, 300 kilodalton and above. So I think in those specimens, you may as well start with ice, because particularly the thing we heard today is so easy, right? Here or elsewhere. So there's no reason why don't we just try it in ice, right, Ron? It's so just a comment.
One comment about this particle size, this particle quality issue, right, that I think that is really going to be dependent on the size of the particle. Maybe for a large symmetric particle, there will be a clear...
I wanted to make a contribution to the correlation discussion. Some time ago, I was very excited about the idea of making this exhaustive mapping of you know, each particle against all orientations, and thought that using that signature and comparing it, you know, with the signature that you expect, the sort of autocorrelation signature, there sure should be much more information in order to classify the problem. And it turned out to be a flop. Bill Baxter spent probably a year looking into this, and we didn't find a good solution.
Why was it a flop?
It didn't give a good consistency in many respects. We just could not find a realistic answer by this.
So is your enthusiasm now
dampened? Yes.
I read that paper where you did the Monte Carlo, and I thought that looked incredibly promising and very exciting. So I guess what I'm asking is it standard in E-Man now?
No, that's completely independent.
So shouldn't it be standard in E-Man?
In the beginning, I thought it probably would work, but these physicists at the Chemie, and we discussed that we want people to participate, and this guy came with this hobby background. And we took about 2 years to do this, and I think we did a really good test because we was special when we know the answers. And I think this is a very difficult paper to write. I'm sure that you will read as well, because it's really painful. But if you just look at the conclusion, I think there's something there possible.
So, I mean, is the working...
Well,
Richard already mentioned the point of using tilt pairs. I want to return to that. So I think one would be quite happy with evaluating the quality of a single particle, the image of a single particle, at say 20 angstrom resolution. And so having taken one micrograph with low dose for the high resolution structure, you can still afford to take a second one and have 20 angstrom resolution.
Right.
And then you're not going to ask only whether the image taken at with the first dose is consistent with the model, but the more demanding question, whether one then tilted by 20 degrees from the first one, is also consistent with the same model.
And I think Richard shows some type
of... Yeah, I expect many particles will be, but if they aren't, better chuck it out.
Right. So maybe we should move to the next slide.
Wah asked me, you know, shouldn't you just go straight to ice? I must admit, you know, things may well be easy in ice, but I think it's always easier to start things first in negative stain. You know, you learn what the problems really are before you compound them by doing a frozen hydrated preparation. Yeah.
Things can be so discouraging. And, you know, in my case, we would have dropped the project. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are exceptions. And but I think that I'm a firm believer that the general in general, stain is pretty darn good.
Which stain?
Urinal acetate, I think, is pretty good. It's a nice fixative.
Do you use a range of things that work? You know,
I wouldn't. I would just try urinal acetate, and if that doesn't work, then you know maybe it's too floppy, or maybe there's a salt problem, or maybe there's a pH problem, and in that case you'd probably just turn to ice. But I think stain is so easy and so quick that it's always worth doing it in stain first. You say fixation destroys the resolution?
Yeah.
Well, but I think it would be important to make one point, which Ron already brought up, right? Which is the fact that no one is advocating that the final reconstruction should come from stain data. That would be crazy, right? And, of course, some specimens will not react, you know, do okay in stain. But I think the advantage is the how quickly you can get things done, right? You could spend a lot of time looking at a very difficult situation in ice, and perhaps in a week, you could take, easily in a week, you could take stain samples, do a random conical tilt really quick, and get an idea, okay, this is the kind of challenges that I'm going to face once I move to unstained specimens. So the fact that it's so easy to do. So I am going to skip these two slides because we've already kind of gone over this. Now, so once you have an idea that your data is okay and you've made a decision that you're going to go in stain or straight to ice because you're confident that that will work better for you, is an initial model really necessary to start a 3D reconstruction? And what I would suggest to start the discussion is that the answer to that question really depends on the size and the shape of the particle. Particles that are asymmetric, small, kind of roundish, could, I think, at least in our experience, do require a pretty decent starting model. So.
Well, there are lots of people in the room who've done single particle reconstructions. What's your experience? I'll pick on someone.
I mean, I think it's absolutely critical, and I think most of the wrong structures out in the literature are wrong because of an initial model.
Right.
If it's got high symmetry, and I can't even virus if it starts with a Gaussian blot most of the time, then it's fine. But I think every thing and everything under 500 kilodaltons.
Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would also go back to Paul's comment that when you are talking about an initial model, you're really talking about, 40, 30 angstrom resolution, right? And there are particles that unfortunately look symmetric at 40 angstrom resolution that are not symmetric. And that really complicates distinguishing views like top from side views, as somebody mentioned, for many complexes, right? So I think this kind of drives, at least for us, it's driven home the point that you do need a pretty decent model to get past the hump of having things roughly aligned at the beginning.
Well, why don't we link that with the previous question? Should the initial model, is it adequate for it to be a negatively stained initial model?
I have some examples of that coming up, so we can go back to this. So going back to this question, how do you get the initial model? So obviously the ideal way to go is get images of specimens that are well preserved, which basically means eyes, right? And then use a very robust way of determining alignment parameters, which could be probably random conical tilt. I would like to go back to the information that Tom presented about using cryonegative staining and a brief comment that he made that we have found to really apply to our experience, which is cryonegative staining has some advantages, but there is only a fraction of the particles that is properly preserved in cryonegative stain samples. So you're faced with this situation that maybe you have less problems with deformation, but then you have to face this problem of how do you, what Juan mentioned, you really need to know how to stain, to make these stain samples to actually get meaningful data. So I think ideally, like I said, if you could use unstained specimens and do random conical tilt or angular reconstitution, then you would be in business, right?
What about tomography for the starting model?
I think that would be a great idea, but the starting model, at least in our experience, needs to be, you know, 35 to 40 angstroms. So if you can get a reconstruction, if your particle is big enough that you can get a reconstruction at that resolution, then definitely.
Well, for small particles, if you have quite a number of them in the field, you can just take it at very quite high mag and do the tomogram at high magnification, and that should get you 30, 40 angstroms. And, you know, you can do a few of them, and if there should be a few in the field, then you should have a feel for whether or not they look the same or not. And then just the line. And you get it, again, it's a low-resolution model, but...
So, why, and then Bridget?
Oh.
I wonder whether we should put up a set of data and let people try it as a homework exercise.
Bridget, I think you had a comment too. Sorry, someone is.
I'm not doing single particle, and I never wanted to do so far because in my field it doesn't work, or so far it didn't work, and. Now I'm thinking about it, and I just want to ask, if you have a particle, 700 kilodalton, pseudosymmetric, and it looks only pseudosymmetric at 30 angstrom resolution, usually, so is that enough as an initial model by tomography in spite of having a missing wedge?
I guess it depends on the shape of the particle, but in some instances I have a couple of examples I think that could work. Sorry, David had a comment here. David has a...
Well, I don't know that I need a microphone. I'll use one anyway. So people have thought for over the years of taking small proteins and sticking them onto bigger things that are known. And I know some people have tried it, but since there are all these people collected here, is there any shot that that will work? You know, are you...
You mean decorating the outside of a virus, say?
Actin or some other, or even not, maybe doesn't even have to be that big, maybe some stable, putting on the ribosome, I don't know, something you can recognize.
Well, we've done this some time ago. Actually, Christian Spahn stuck a tRNA in the bank of the ribosome genetically, and it, sure enough, it came out beautifully.
Of course, we didn't want to have this, know the structure of the tRNA. But more recently, we applied it to the group 2 intron, and it worked. But we didn't get it to a very high resolution.
Is that because the connection is floppy, you think? Or?
It was a very strange reason. We expected the group 2 intron to be much more compact according to its molecular mass. Instead, it came out with almost the same size of the ribosome. So because, as we learned later, it is essentially hollow. And we didn't expect it, but what it did to the refinement is it produced havoc. It's just made the alignment go astray. So we got not very good results.
And I think that the David's comment about if you do that, the particle has to be attached to a known particle, larger particle, very in a single orientation, right? Otherwise, it's going to be blurred out. So you get into this issue of...
We have these methods now, people claim, where you can, you know, pick out the variability. So, I don't know. If you get it slightly localized, are you in better shape? Or isn't that helpful?
Well, I guess my question would be, how long is it going to take to get it figured out? As opposed to, you know, maybe you get some sort of low-resolution model. Maybe you can get some semi, you know.
A starting model.
Yeah, exactly. So at here I would have a, if you guys don't have any more comments, I would have a question for the people that are actually developing methods. At least in our experience, which is actually limited to SPIDER, the image alignment protocols work very well. So you can align to the images, reference-free alignment, very reliably. However, classification and common lines are significantly trickier, right? Classification in particular seems to require a lot of interaction. So I think in terms of generating models, it would make very, very good sense to take ICE data and then do common lines, you know, classification followed by common lines. But that would require classification methods and common lines protocols that were more robust and that required less human intervention. I don't know if perhaps Paul or Steve or somebody else would like to comment on that.
Well, I commented on it the other day quite a bit. I know you missed the talk, but I think using common lines to come up with initial models is a very bad way because it tends to, if you get the answer wrong, it puts you right near a false minima, a local minima in the energy space, and it's very hard to get out.
Does anybody else has?
Yeah, put it differently. What that means is that existing algorithms are not good. Yes, different way of putting it. So, to be more optimistic, of course, there is much more work needed on getting that time and funding to the proof.
Are there new algorithms or just better implementations of existing ones? Is that which?
Because common line-based algorithms are not very good. They use only a fraction of available information.
In common lines representation, we only consider information along intersection of two Fourier slabs. But in fact, there is much more information that they share, and this is not used in these algorithms. So probably somewhere along these lines, one could improve the sensitivity and behavior in general.
Actually, I'd also point out that the Monte Carlo-based approach that Hua was talking about is very similar to sort of a common line solution where you're actually using all of the information in the sense that you're sort of randomly putting particles in and seeing how well they fit, and it actually works surprisingly well. I don't know how well it's going to work in asymmetric structures and that sort of thing, but on small things. But
that's a good idea, although time-wise that's not feasible, because the number of combinations to explore is enormous. So it's always better for symmetric structure. Now I'm saying if you really want to have any confidence that you're getting close to true answer, I don't think that time-wise it's a feasible approach, and one is always better off working in transform spaces where evaluation can be done much quicker. In simple words, to avoid reconstruction step.
Any more comments on this? So I guess, so there is... Oh, sorry.
Did you want to say something?
No, sorry.
I'm actually using the common line to make initial model using the WAS just published the paper, the method. And I'm working on the Felipe virus, which is super smooth and flat surface. So, and that's, I'm quite successful. And the consistent criteria to select particle or whatever, this is, for my project, works very well. I don't know for the asymmetry reconstruction, but for the high symmetry, for like Flippy virus, this is, I think it's very difficult, works very well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's my own, my personal experience.
I can add one more positive comment that even with this not very robust command lines routines, we have been able to do classification and command lines of ice images for asymmetric objects that are about 700,000 Daltons and current reconstructions that are reasonable. So I think really having more robust algorithms would really make a big difference.
How do you know they work?
Because they happen to be a complex of polymerase with another component of the transcription machinery, so you can look at the polymerase portion of the structure and say, okay, that looks reasonable. Therefore, you know, there's a chance that the whole thing makes sense. So so then going back to this question, and here I just have an example from my own work of what would constitute an appropriate initial model. And again, I can only draw on my own experience, but hopefully you guys will have much more to add. I think that at least from our work, what the way to define a decent initial model has simply to do with the shape of the molecule. The shape of the initial model has, the shape and dimensions have to be correct, regardless of the resolution. And just as an example here, I show a refinement of human polymerase, which is there on your right, that was refined starting from an X-ray, a model generated from the X-ray structure of yeast polymerase that is about 40, 45 angstrom resolution. So this is one situation where things will be very easy to implement. If you have a related structure, you can filter it to the point where there is no detail left, and then look at the result and compare it with the X-ray structure and say, well, you know, this was good enough to get it started. And I don't know, I'm sure that some of you probably have examples of taking this kind of approach. Okay, so so I am going.
You're not going away.
I am going to bring again this issue of common lines, which I'm sure you're really tired of it, but just this is the way I have my slides organized. That I think, going back to the point that negative stain is very easy and. Just, I would like to show you a couple of examples of cases where it has worked very well. And again, I think we have some information of what type of situations it could work for. So Tom had an example of a reasonably flat molecule where a random conical tilt reconstruction worked reasonably well. And it made me think of this other example that we have, which is fatty acid synthase. So on top is a random conical tilt in a stain reconstruction. And then in the middle is a cryo reconstruction that was refined from that random conical tilt. So, of course, now comes Bridget's question, how do you know that makes any sense? Well, an X-ray model at about 5 angstrom resolution of the same complex was published last year, and it agrees very well with our EM structure, except for these domains that are highly mobile and that we knew were not present in our reconstruction. So this is an example of a flat molecule, much like the one that Tom showed, where random conical tilt in a stain, this is as primitive as you can get, right? Basically, you make your samples, take pictures, day number 3, you have your reconstruction. It's good enough for an initial model. And I don't know if anybody has any other experiences that agree with this. I can give you the counterpoint. For polymerases, random conical tilt reconstructions in a stain are absolutely useless because they are completely flattened. So there is no point in even trying. So it seems to be very dependent on the molecule.
What about these deep stain methods that people like Radamanta?
Maybe someone wants to say something about that?
These are the double carbon film?
No,
or they just.
Even without double carbon film, I think they managed to get them really embedded well.
So I have something to say about that. So what they do is they usually prepare samples with uranyl acetate, and what they do is they leave the stain on the grid and then evaporate it by blowing on it, right? And then you have a lot of the stain. And then I am sure many of you remember that years ago there was this methylamine tungstate idea that, you know, some reconstructions of yeast complex. I don't remember exactly. It was actually compared with a cryo reconstruction. I think that goes back to Wa's comment. You really have to know how to prepare the samples and exactly where to take the pictures, or otherwise you end up with data that is not really meaningful.
So who has done a reconstruction in stain of a single particle? So would any of you like to say something about how good or bad it was?
If I had my choice, I would not do it in stain again.
I would agree in the sense that very often in stain, there's just not enough high resolution against this initial structure. For some objects, there's just not enough features. Everything looks so similar, low resolution, or small particles, that it's a mixed blessing. There is more contrast, but fewer features.
But I remember a comment from Richard Henderson a few years ago who said that you should always start your refinement with a very low resolution structure to make sure that whatever comes, the way I understood it anyway, that whatever comes out of it actually comes from the data, not from your reference.
Yeah, that's when it works, but I mean, yeah. there are other... I have no more to say.
No, I was just going to make a quick comment that when I gave on the first day when I gave my talk, I briefly showed a random conical tilt 3D reconstruction that I did on transparent complex on the monolayer, and I can show anyone that wants to see on my computer. Tom didn't show this in his talk because it's a new result, and we've only done it on transparent, but the flatness in the Z direction wasn't anything like the initial models that they previously calculated. And I had this crazy idea that perhaps since the specimen is not directly touching the carbon, it's actually like on the monolayer that's a bit wavy, I might have a bit of a molecular pillow that can kind of dampen the drying effect of with the particle going down and smashing out or something like that. And I've yet to explore it with like a 50S ribosome or something like that, where it's big and you see a greater dampening effect. But on these small particles, I think it would be great to do it on a monolayer to actually explore that as an option. If anybody would like to see the reconstruction, I'd be more than happy to show them how it's actually filled in and not really suffering as much from this sort of artifact.
Well, I'm probably repeating what others have said, but sometimes it just doesn't work in ice, and then the only thing that is left to try is stain. Or you start with stain, and you get a structure out that answers some of the questions that you wanted to answer. I sort of get the feeling that some people systematically don't like stain and would, basically never want to think about it. And I think I can't subscribe to that view. I think ice is definitely always the thing to try. But if it doesn't work and one can answer some questions in stain, then that would be okay.
Well, one could also say that a stain may be the quickest way to get to ice, right? I don't think anybody's advocating that should be the end point, but it could get you to ice quickly.
Yeah, I would just like to caution people to against making generalizations from any particular set of observations,
right. Yeah.
Because we've looked a number of single particles in stain, but the helical filaments we have actually more experience on. Actin, I showed that 12 angstrom complex of actin with the two CH domains. At 20 angstroms resolution, the reconstruction in negative stain is indistinguishable from that in ice. Pure F actin at 20 angstroms resolution is indistinguishable in ice and negative stain. Par M that I showed is very different in ice and negative stain, and we investigated that, and by tilting in negative stain, we can see it's completely flattened, and therefore you see a different conformation of the nucleotide of the two domains,
right,
in stain.
Yeah, I think that's a great comment, and we have an observation that we have made is if you tend to work with particles that are semi-spherical, like a polymerase, you can very quickly make a decision, because when you take your zero tilt images, those are round, they are little circles, right? If you then tilt and they are elongated, then you know something has gone terribly wrong, right? So there are quick ways of assessing how your specimen, is it really worth pursuing it or is it going to be hopeless, at least in some instances.
Some people have tried or found that if you put something like TMV or some other big structure in with little structures, it keeps the stain from totally flattening them. It keeps a thicker layer. I don't know if people have tried that lately.
Mix in a particle is much larger. For instance, a virus has a diameter of about 1,000 angstroms. And if you're looking at a virus at 300 angstroms, the rotavirus is this nice, provides a nice layer to maintain the thickness of the meniscus as you go on. In reference to stain, how can you not look at a specimen in stain? It takes 5 minutes. You know instantly.